It is Friday, August 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea declares a quasi-state of war against the South. Stocks fall in Asia, Europe, and the United States.
It's uncertainty, layer upon layer of uncertainty.
And the new hit film Straight Outta Compton continues to ignite controversy. It's all ahead. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un placed his military on high alert and declared a quasi-state of war in frontline areas Friday after North and South Korea exchanged artillery fire near the border. Mr. Kim said frontline units would enter a wartime state starting at 5 p.m. local time Friday. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul, and he describes the cause of the current tension.
There had been an incident yesterday where North Korea had supposedly targeted a South Korean loudspeaker tower that was broadcasting anti-regime propaganda, which leads back to a few weeks ago when there was an incident in the border area where a landmine supposedly planted by North Korea was injured two South Korean soldiers. So it's been this slowly escalating tension up until now. Actually, the North Korean ambassador to China just this afternoon specifically said that the reason for the imminent attack is the loudspeaker propaganda happening at the border area. North Korea has set a 48-hour deadline that began yesterday. And so in local time, Saturday afternoon, 5 p.m., that deadline will expire. And if the broadcasts continue to go and continue after that time, North Korea has vowed that it will take military action to knock those transmission towers out.
The rhetoric has been fairly fierce in the past between North and South Korea, but does this time it seems to be getting more fierce?
That's hard to say. There are indications that this has been a very calculated and calibrated escalation. The artillery shelling that occurred yesterday from the North Korean side, it hit an empty mountainside. It didn't cause any casualties. South Korea responded with an overwhelming number of artillery shells fired back into the north. But North Korea as well targeted an area that was uninhabited. So on both of these shows of force, it seems like they were specifically trying to limit the amount of damage and to thus limit the reaction and try to limit the conflict, prevent the conflict from spreading.
What has been the response by the South Korean government to this declaration by the North?
South Korea has vowed to continue its broadcast. South Korea has vowed not to give in to what they call pressure, this kind of pressure or this use of military force to try to get them to compel and change their behavior. They have vowed that they will not change. Both sides at this point cannot back down. Both sides at this point do not want war. There are high expectations that something will happen here in the border area, at the least, in the next 24 hours.
And what do you base that on?
We base that on both sides' rhetoric. Both sides are preparing for this. The South Korean Defense Ministry said they expect this to happen, and they're refusing to back down. The North Korean side saying that the broadcasting, the anti-propaganda broadcasts at the border have to end, or they will attack. So both sides have laid down a line in the sand. Interestingly enough, at the same time yesterday that this attack occurred, a letter was sent from Pyongyang to Seoul that The letter said two things. The letter said, warned South Korea that it must stop the broadcast or there will be military action, even though there was military action already occurring. But the second thing that the letter said was that North Korea is willing to discuss this issue to try to find an alternative solution. South Korea's response to that was they take at face value North Korea's threat, but totally discount their offer for talks. So both sides seem to be very much wedged into a position where some sort of confrontation has to happen. Now, will it be limited? That's the expectation. There'll be some limited. Will it be like Thursday where there are some limited artillery rounds fired and damage is minimal? We don't know. And even if there are great concerns that these types of controlled violence can easily escalate and get out of hand.
Okay, thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
That's VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. What's the reaction on social media to the escalating tensions on the Korean Peninsula?
Oh, there's a lot of reaction, a broad range. And of course, as is to be expected, Korea, South Korea, North Korea are all trending today on social media. One hashtag that's trending is hashtag pray for Korea. And a lot of people are using this to say war is not the answer. That's the overwhelming message that people are sending out. They're calling for peace. There's also an image that's being shared around widely. It says pray for Korea. And the O in the word for is the red and blue circle at the center of the South Korean flag, which is a symbol of peace and balance. So people are trying to use that symbol to call for calm. And it's really hope for both sides. People are saying they're hopeful that South Korea doesn't further provoke the North, that things calm down. But they're also hopeful that maybe the North will, you know, not also provoke anybody, but also maybe give some more rights to their people. So kind of taking it a step further than this conflict and saying, well, maybe this can be a start of something new. It's high hopes for sure. I don't know if they'll be realized, but hope for sure. And then you have Kim Jong-un is trending as well. And now this is interesting because, well, you have hashtag pray for Korea and it's all positive and hopeful. Kim Jong-un, the people who are tweeting about him, are doing so a lot of jokes and things. So some of the tweets that I've seen that I thought were interesting were a couple people saying, somebody give Kim Jong-un a Snickers bar. This is, of course, a famous commercial here in the U.S. where you have people that are very grumpy and they are lashing out and they say, have a Snickers and you'll feel better. And then they transform back to their old selves. People saying, you know, Kim Jong-un declares war on the South and people care more about One Direction's new music video, because that was actually the top trending topic this morning. The boy band One Direction released a music video. More people were talking about that for a short time. So people pointing out the kind of absurdity of that. And then there were people that just kind of make statements that are just laying it out and saying, you know, whenever Kim Jong-un is trending, it's never a good thing. Another person saying, I was trying to make a joke about this, but I realize he does a pretty good job on his own. So a lot of jokes at his expense, a lot of people taking the situation, trying to make light of it, but a lot of other people seeing how serious it is and hoping that it resolves quickly and that it doesn't escalate any further.
All right. All right. Well, thanks, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
If you see someone yawn, it's most likely that you'll yawn too. This phenomenon is often referred to as contagious yawning and has been associated with feelings of empathy and bonding. Now, scientists at Baylor University in Texas have found that people with psychopathic traits are less likely to be affected by contagious yawning. Those with psychopathic traits aren't as empathetic and tend to be quite cunning and manipulative without regard for others. The researchers recruited volunteers to serve as test subjects and gave them a psychological screening test to determine their degree of empathy. The volunteers were then shown short video clips showing various facial movements, including yawns, while the researchers recorded the volunteers' reactions. They found that the people with the strongest psychopathic tendencies were the least likely to catch a yawn after seeing it in another person. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about the hacking of the Ashley Madison website. Far-left members of Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras's ruling Syriza party have broken off to form their own party after unsuccessfully trying to block passage of a $95 billion bailout package from the European Central Bank. The 25 lawmakers announced Friday they will create the Popular Unity Party. The Popular Unity members are those who expressed disappointment with Mr. Tsipras after he reversed a vow not to implement new austerity measures in exchange for bailout funding from the European Union. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Anders Osland, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council in Washington.
For some time, we've been hearing about Greece and its financial crisis, but now it seems there's also a political crisis. Please explain what is happening here.
Well, I think that this was exactly what you would have expected and even hoped for. In the last week, Greece made an agreement with the European Union, got basically the financial support that it needed. And in order to proceed, Greece needed a stronger political foundation to move ahead. The ruling Syriza party had effectively split, while Prime Minister Tsipras maintained control over the bulk of it, and he runs very high in the opinion polls. What do? You call a snap election in order to get a good political basis to move ahead, and that's exactly what he has done.
But now with this new split party, the Popular Unity Party, isn't that going to be threatening Syriza's control over parliament?
It might be that it will be a coalition government with several other parties, but since there are three pro-European opposition parties that would be happy to support the policies that Prime Minister Tsipras has now signed up to, that would not be a problem. It's rather a problem for these left-wing extremists that are presumably marching out into the political desert.
The Popular Unity Party is strongly opposed to the package of concessions that were made by Syriza and the Prime Minister in order to get yet another bailout from the European Union. From the EU's side, what do you think they're thinking of all of this?
I think that they feel relieved. You can't move ahead with a party that is completely split and has a lot of rather extreme left-wing elements. So this is probably what the European Union would like to see, but of course it would be improper for them to say so in public because you are not supposed to interfere too much in domestic politics in another country.
When do you expect the snap election to take place?
As I understand, we are thinking of the 20th of September, that is as fast as just possible. And I think everybody's happy about that.
Do you have any predictions as to who is going to capture the most seats?
I think that Prime Minister Tsipras has managed this very cleverly, whatever you think of him politically. So I would presume that he's now showing his mastery, but elections are always unpredictable.
Anders Osland is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council in Washington.
That's International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Well, U.S. stocks are sharply down following similar tumbles in Asia and Europe. I asked VOA Economics editor Jim Randall the reasons for the decline.
It's uncertainty, layer upon layer of uncertainty. The Greek election, call for Greek election, that adds unwelcome and unwanted uncertainty, political uncertainty, to an already complicated picture. China, the engine of economic growth for the past 10 years, China seems to be slowing down. There's new data today that shows that their industrial output is shrinking a bit instead of growing. And there's also uncertainty, even more uncertainty, about whether or not the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank, is going to actually raise interest rates on September 17th or not. And investors hate uncertainty. Uncertainty means that there's a greater chance that they will lose money, and they're playing with billions of dollars at a pop. So they worry about this.
And a frightened, worried investor becomes a cautious investor. They stop, they take their money out of stocks. They stop making investments. And investment is what drives the economy. If people aren't buying things, if they're not investing in things, then demand for goods and services declines and the economy slows down. That's what we're seeing on the stock market. People are less willing to buy a stock. A stock is a piece of a company. If you don't think that company is going to prosper and return profit to you, then you're not going to buy it. You're not going to hold it. You may sell it. All of those things push stock prices down. And it's nervousness. The stock market is always in this tension between fear and greed. And right now, fear has the upper hand, and greed is kind of in retreat, and that means that they're less willing to take risks. So greed is in retreat, fear is taking over, and stocks go down.
That is VOA Economics editor Jim Randall. Well, the internet site Ashley Madison has been hacked. Now, this website is designed for married people who want to have affairs. VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard joins me. Doug, how was this hacked?
Well, let's just say, first off, it was for a business whose business model is built around privacy. Ashley Madison should have taken a lot more care about how they structured their site and their databases. I don't want to give away too many tricks, but looking at some of the analysis, it seems clear that people are saying, look, this hack was actually inevitable. They just did some dumb things with their databases, and now they've put potentially up to 38 million people at risk.
Yeah, I mean, that is frightening because all these people, you know, that even might have some sort of connection. Maybe they have a friend or somebody.
And the really important thing is, even if you're not registered on AshleyMadison.com, you may know somebody who is. And the way these digital databases are constructed, you get linked to that people and those people. And this kind of becomes part of your cyber identity. So things like this is not a story that really should inspire too much sniggers, but really more, you know, concern and attention to our cyber safety.
Thanks very much. That's Doug Bernard. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. The rise of NWA and gangster rap in the late 1980s in Los Angeles is the subject of a new movie, Straight Outta Compton. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the movie and her thoughts on its portrayal of legendary rappers Ice Cube, Eazy-E, and Dr. Dre.
It was a hit record. Now it's a hit movie, as a matter of fact, topping the box office. But Straight Outta Compton has generated some controversy. Shauna Renee, what's the controversy? Why are people upset about this movie?
Well, let's begin, first of all, by I want to just congratulate the makers of the movie, the directors and the producers of the movie. No one expected that this movie would do as well as it did. It came in at number one. It made $60 million. It was a fantastic movie. It was a great movie, well-directed, and if you know anything about NWA or you are in any way interested in the environment and the conditions that created the necessity for that kind of music to be released and produced, then you need to see the movie. Now, unfortunately, and we kind of suspected this would be the case, there were so many things, so many pieces, moving pieces in and around NWA and the music industry at that time. So there are some folks who are a little upset that Dr. Dre in particular, who had a history of abuse toward women, did not include those issues or those instances in this movie. Now, he was one of the executive producers. He did have some decision-making ability and I guess chose not to include the fact that he had been known for and had actually been witnessed beating a few women.
From a musicological standpoint here, what's the music like? Do they accurately portray the rise of NWA, and do the guys who are playing, like Ice Cube
and Dr. Dre, do they carry it off? I've
Absolutely.
Heard they do very well.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you know, Ice Cube's son plays him. And there was a point in the movie, you know, they talk about suspension of belief. There was a point in the movie where I forgot I was watching an actor play Ice Cube. They pulled it off. It was cast beautifully. Any complaints that were heard prior to the movie being released have been hushed. They knew exactly what they were doing. They did a great job. The music was wonderful. Of course, there was lots of NWA music, but lots of music that was also popular at that time that inspired the production that Dr. Dre has become so well known for. So it was musically, it was phenomenal as well. It was a great movie. It was a great movie.
All right. Well, I guess that constitutes 5 stars on Shauna's movie review. If you have any comments about Straight Outta Compton, you can send them to her at VOA Lady DJ. That's her Twitter handle. You can also send it to at VOA underscore music. And you can listen for Shauna every week in the Soul Lounge, where she will be spinning some of your top R&B favorites at www.voanews.com. Straight out of Compton, crazy mother named Ice Cube. From the gang called with attitude. When I'm called off, I got a sword on. Squeeze the trigger and bodies on hold on. You too, boy, if you mess with me, the police are gonna have to come and get me. Off your gas, how I'm going now. But I suck at mine with your fast showing now. Purple suck a mumble, they want to rumble. Mix them and cook them in a pot like gumbo. Going off on a mother like that. With a cat, gas pointed at your ass.
That's music from the film Straight Outta Compton. And that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
To predict the future success of a nation, all you need to do is look at how it treats its women, said President Barack Obama recently during a speech before the African Union. Nobody would put out a football team and then just play half the team. You'd lose, said President Obama. The same is true when it comes to getting everybody an education. You can't leave half the team off, our young women.
When girls cannot go to school and grow up not knowing how to read or write, that denies the world future women engineers, future women doctors, future women business owners, future women presidents. That sets us all back. That's a bad tradition, not providing our girls the same education as our sons.
That is why earlier this year, President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama launched the Let Girls Learn initiative. Through this program, a number of United States government agencies and non-governmental organizations, including the Department of State, U.S. Agency for International Development, PEPFAR, the Peace Corps, and the Millennium Challenge Corporation, work together to address some of the many challenges preventing adolescent girls from attending and completing school and receiving high-quality education. So, for example, in northern Nigeria, children displaced by conflict, especially adolescent girls, can continue their education at the newly developed learning centers. In Zimbabwe, through the Girls Empowerment Movement, Let Girls Learn helps establish clubs in schools that encourage girls to be educated and empowered decision makers. And in Kenya, the Global Give Back Circle helps disadvantaged girls pursue their education from upper secondary to university and gain skills that help them secure jobs. Let girls learn so they grow up healthy and they grow up strong. That will be good for families, and they will raise smart, healthy children, and that will be good for every one of your nations, said President Obama. Let's lift up the next generation of women leaders who can help fight injustice and forge peace and start new businesses and create. We'll all be better off when women have equal futures.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.